Tumbler, I think it was called. The land's been pitched and changed so much, it don't mean a thing.
Going faster.
The cliffs had begun to close in, shutting out the coppery sunlight, cramping the river and forcing it to run deep and fast. Land shakes, before the long winters began, had plucked massive boulders from the walls of orange stone and hurled them into the foggy torrent, bringing more hazard to the rafts, for there was now no possibility of landing to try a portage around the worst dangers. Strasser's raft was in sight, appearing and then vanishing as the river's curves concealed it again.
Damn it! Damn this battle! Damn the three candidates!
Dot threw the shattered remnants of his paddle into the water, where it had splintered against a submerged rock. He fumbled with the cords that secured their spare paddles, eventually freeing one. But a violent lurch threw him against the side before he could retie them, and all the spares went tumbling into the rapids.
Hang on!
The old man leaned out to try to retrieve the bobbing paddles. The bends were getting sharper, and they could no longer see the small raft ahead of them. At one point, the cliffs were so close together that their inflatable almost brushed both sides, riding in the wall of solid gray-green. JB turned to shout something to Ryan, while simultaneously bending off the lunging walls of stone. But Ryan couldn't hear him above the thunder of the river. Rosa was weeping. Fortunately for her, Strasser was too busy wrestling with the steering wheel in the stern to reach her. He tried screaming, raging, and threatening, but none of it had the least effect. Rosa's shiny boots were dulled with a constant immersion in muddied water, and her trim riding skirt was torn and limp. The elegant ponytail was long gone. Her blank, beautiful eyes were swollen with weeping, and her quirt had been lost over the side of the raft. But she was still gripping the butt of the ZKR-551, knuckles as white as carved bone. Mildred watched, considering trying to untie herself and then slip into the water, but she could see that her chances of survival would be no better than by staying in the raft and taking her chances with Strasser. By now, they were hurtling along at a fearful pace, spinning around blind corners at a speed that must have been close to 30 miles an hour. Mildred could feel herself becoming dizzier and dizzier. Wraith cowered in the bow, having given up on trying to call out dangers to his boss in the stern. In any case, half the time, the bow had become the stern, as the inflatable whirled around uncontrollably. As the raft shot out of yet another blind bend, Mildred glimpsed something, less than 200 yards ahead, something so bizarre and incomprehensible that she closed her eyes and rubbed them. She opened them to find that her first startling impression had been right. Scant seconds later, Ryan's larger raft came around the same corner, and they all saw what Mildred had seen. Jack pointed, speechless, facing Ryan over his shoulder. Then Ryan saw it.
Oh, fuck!
The river vanished, disappearing into a great cloud of mist. Its edge was green and polished like waxed oilcloth, seeming not to be moving. Ryan thought for a moment that they must somehow have reached the end of the world. Nobody else shouted. There was simply this grim fascination with the waterfall that was rushing toward them. It wasn't possible to guess how deep the drop was or what lay at the bottom.
Satan Scrambler!
It was Ryan's last coherent thought as the raft reached the brink of the roaring abyss. It was a nanosecond of suspense. The inflatable hung in the singing damp space, its own impetus holding it for a frozen fragment of time. Then it began to fold and tip at the front, and finally fell with a sickening, heart-stopping speed. They landed with a smashing force, right way up, water surging like a solid wall over every side. The impact burst five of the remaining buoyancy compartments, the aged fabric splitting apart, flooding immediately. Like a brain-shot animal, the raft made a quivering effort to reach the surface, just breaking clear, then subsiding lumpishly toward the bottom of the deep pool that lay at the foot of the teeming waterfall. Christy was thrown against JD, cracking her head on his forearm. Fortunately, her mat of fiery hair protected her from the broken skull. Jack was thrown out over the bow, but the retaining cord around his midriff jerked him back in again, like a demented yo-yo. Ryan had gone under with his mouth open, feeling liquid ice gush into his throat and fill his lungs. He flailed around in a moment of purest dark panic. Then he managed to get a grip on his senses and fumbled for the knot about his waist, knowing that the raft was sinking under him and dragging everyone down with it. His chest was being squeezed in a gigantic vise of pain, and his eye bulged with the effort of fighting for freedom. The water had tightened the thin cord, and he finally reached for his conga, nearly dropping the slick hilt through his numb fingers, eventually gluing the keen steel partha rope, which allowed him to kick his way to the distant cleared surface. Rand burst into the fresh air. At his side, he saw Jack, JB, and Christy, all treading water, trying to establish their bearings after the plummeting fall.
Doc!
Something nudged his ankle, and he dove, reaching below the surface of the pool. His fingers tangled in something, and he heaved, finding himself dragging up the head of Doc Tanner, the body trailing beneath it. As Ryan supported the old man, his eyes blinked open, and he freed his silvery locks from Ryan's hand.
You scalp better than the bloody Iroquois themselves, my dear friend.
Despite the overwhelming noise of the falling water, the pool was comparatively calm. There was no strong undertow, and their drop had taken them a little to one side of the main current. All five bobbed close together, glancing around and trying to get their bearings. Ryan pointed, seeing the tatters of another inflatable raft, wrapped limply around a lichen-covered boulder to the left. That meant that Strasser had come the same course that they had, with what looked like the same result. There was a shelf of low rock that thrust out from among trees on the right of the river. Ryan led the way toward it, moving in a slow sidestroke, kicking out strongly. The others followed him in a ragged, splashing line, Doc bringing up the rear, huffing like a world-weary Grampus. Christy suddenly vanished beneath the water.
Lover!
She emerged a moment later, arms waving.
Something grabbed me. Something down in Algaia!
Beneath the oaks that fringed the pool, the noise of the fall was dim, the surface of the water calm and glassy. Just in front of Christy, that stillness was broken by the eruption of a corpse. It bobbed up head first, clad in a torn blouse that revealed white breasts, the skin gashed into bloodless lips. Its eyes were wide open, staring blindly, protruding from their dark sockets. The mouth gaped, and the swollen, purple tongue thrust obscenely between the thickened lips. As the corpse danced and swayed, everyone could see that there were marks, livid against the pallor of its throat. The hair of the woman, very dark, fringed the face.
Someone strangled her. Did her real good.
Ryan stared at the dead woman, wondering if the fingers had belonged to Court Strasser. Or Mildred. Strasser and Mildred had been the only two on their inflatable who'd seen the terrifying drop before plunging over. Rafe had been looking back toward his chief, staring past him to see if he could catch a glimpse of their inexorable pursuers. Rosa, still gripping Mildred's revolver, lay on her face in the swirling water at the bottom of the raft, oblivious to everything. Mildred saw the silken edge of the fall and was already starting to untie herself. Strasser also spotted the peril, but he began to laugh. That was the last sound that Mildred heard as they dropped vertically, ending with a great wave of white foam. In the smaller inflatable, the effect was even more devastating, with most of the strained panels bursting and whole sections disintegrating. The mooring rings ripped away, releasing all four of them from the sinking vessel. Mildred had untied herself from Rosa and was now completely free, trying to kick to the surface. She broke into the light and sucked in a great gulp of cold, wonderful air when something snatched her ankle and pulled her under. In the dark deep, she realized that it was Strasser's woman, and locked into blind panic, she was still holding Mildred's blaster. Using all her strength, Mildred reached down the other woman's right arm, groping for the hand and the solid weight of the ZKR-551, feeling it and twisting with savage power. She was aware that she'd probably broken at least two of Rosa's fingers. She managed to wedge the pistol into the back of her belt out of sight, but she was still pinioned below the water. Mildred groped in the suffocating blackness, aware of the splintered emerald light far above, finding Rosa's long black hair and fumbling lower. The woman snapped at her, and Mildred barely jerked her fingers away in time. Now she found the neck, her strong hands clamping around the slender throat, crushing the arteries and cutting off the supply of blood to the brain. For several startled, fearful seconds, Rosa fought against the strangling grip, but Mildred's medical training had taught her precisely what to do. Her own breath was fading, but she was relentless, maintaining the brutal hold, forcing the other woman still deeper. She felt Rosa go limp, but she didn't relax, grimly counting off another 20 seconds, though her own lungs were bursting. She finally let go, kicking the corpse toward the bottom of the pool. When she surfaced, Strasser was already kneeling on the gleaming rocks, the Stetchkin steady in his fist. Rafe was on his hands and knees at his side, struggling mightily.
You chill her, bitch.
She drowned.
Mildred waited for the tearing shock of the bullet, but it never came.